The next morning, the trial was held, as scheduled, in the Silver Baron Saloon, with Frank serving as bailiff. The poker tables and most of the other tables had been moved into the back of the room, except for a couple that would be used by the lawyers and their clients, and the chairs where the card players and drinkers usually sat were now lined up in neat, orderly rows, facing the longer table where Caldwell sat. A sheet had been draped over the big painting of a rather plump nude that hung behind the bar.
All rise.
Judge Caldwell came in through the door at the end of the bar that led into the office.
This court is now in session. You may all be seated.
Now, from his post at the side of the room, Frank looked around at the people who were lowering themselves into chairs in response to the judge's order to be seated. The makeshift courtroom was packed with spectators. All the chairs were full, and men stood behind the chairs and crowded around the bat wings. Catamount Jack had posted himself at the entrance, his arms crossed over his chest and a scowl on his face to keep anybody else from trying to crowd in. The boardwalk was full of men peering through the windows, too. Only two women were in the room. One was Frank's daughter-in-law, Rebel, who sat with her husband, Conrad Browning, both of them taking an intense interest in what was going on. The other was Diana Woodford, who occupied a chair behind the table where her father and Claudius Turnbuckle were seated. She looked worried, too, but she mustered up an encouraging smile when Turnbuckle turned and glanced back at her. The most nervous-looking man in the room, Frank decided, was Claudius Turnbuckle himself. Large beads of sweat dotted his pale, drawn face. Judge Caldwell picked up some papers he had brought with him to the table.
I've read the brief submitted to the court by both parties. Colonel O'Hara, you have an opening statement?
I do, Your Honor, if it please the court.
Proceed.
Your Honor, this is a simple matter, little more than a mere misunderstanding. There is no good or evil here, only a cloud of misperceptions and hard feelings that must be dispersed in order to shine the light of truth and justice on the proceedings. My client, Mr. Dexter Brighton, is the true and legal owner of the mine known as the Lucky Lizard, but he bears no ill will toward Mr. Thomas Woodford, who holds the sincere but incorrect belief that he owns the Lucky Lizard and the silver it produces. Because of Mr. Woodford's sincerity and the mitigating circumstances under which he mistakenly believes that he acquired the rights to the Lucky Lizard, Mr. Brighton has attempted on numerous occasions to reach an accord with Mr. Woodford, an agreement that would divide the disputed property equitably. Mr. Woodford has refused these generous attempts at graciousness on the part of my client. And so we find ourselves in court, come here to settle the matter in the fashion of all true Americans who believe in the rule of law. But make no mistake about it, Your Honor. The facts of the case are on our side, as we shall demonstrate. Although Mr. Woodford had no way of knowing otherwise at the time, the deal he made to buy the Lucky Lizard was illegal because the individual from which he purchased it had no right to dispose of the property in that manner. Therefore, the sale is null and void, and as the only surviving descendant of the original partnership between Jeremiah Fulton and Chester Brighton, my client, Dexter Brighton, is, as I said, the true and legal owner of the Lucky Lizard Mine. That's all, Your Honor.
Thank you, Colonel. Mr. Turnbuckle, do you have an opening statement?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor, I do.
Proceed.
Your Honor, opposing counsel speaks of a misunderstanding. He speaks of misperceptions. There is no misunderstanding in this case. There are no misperceptions. But I agree with the Colonel when he says that this is a simple case. It is very simple. That man, Dex Brighton, that man is trying to steal the Lucky Lizard Mine.
Order! Quiet down, you people! Proceed, Counselor, but remember, despite the surroundings, this isn't an opera house. There's no need for melodrama.
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize to the court. Ever since Mr. Brighton has arrived in Buckskin, he has been making unsubstantiated claims and trying to pressure my client, Mr. Thomas Woodford, into signing away that which is rightfully his.
Whether or not Mr. Brighton's claims are unsubstantiated is what these proceedings will decide, Your Honor. I move that Mr. Turnbuckle's prejudicial characterization be stricken.
He's making an opening statement, Counselor. This is when he gets to be prejudicial. Within reason, sit down.
As I was saying, Your Honor, We will prove that my client is the rightful owner of the Lucky Lizard Mine, and that Mr. Brighton's claims are false. It is indeed as simple as that. Thank you.
Very well. Call your first witness, Counselor.
I have only one, Your Honor. I call my client Dexter Brighton.
Brighton stood up, cast a quick hostile glance toward the table where Luther and Tip Woodford sat, and then walked over to the chair at the end of the judge's table. Frank Morgan stepped forward with a Bible, and Brighton was sworn in, promising to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. His testimony would really be far from that, Luther knew. O'Hara asked only a few questions, allowing Brighton's testimony to fill in the background, the partnership between Jeremiah Fulton and Chester Brighton, Dex Brighton's father, and the agreement they had made to sell out only to each other.
And where was your father, sir, when Mr. Fulton carried out his fraudulent sale of the mining claim, now known as the Lucky Lizard, to Mr. Thomas Woodford?
Objection, Your Honor. As opposing counsel pointed out earlier, we're here to determine what's fraudulent and what's not. And he's questioning a witness now, not making an opening statement.
Quite right, Counselor. The objection is sustained.
Very well, Your Honor. I'll rephrase the question. Where was your father when Jeremiah Fulton sold the mining claim to Thomas Woodford?
They had parted company temporarily. My father was in poor health and had returned to the East to recuperate while Fulton continued prospecting. But the partnership was never dissolved. I have the original agreement, written and signed by Jeremiah Fulton himself, to prove that. My father gave it to me before he died and asked me to reclaim what was rightfully his. Rightfully mine now, of course, since my father has passed on.
What exactly does this agreement stipulate?
That each of the partners could only sell his interest to the other, and that if either of them died, his interest would go to the other partner.
And when did Jeremiah Fulton pass on?
January 22nd, 1882.
Do you have proof of that?
A copy of the death certificate from Ford County, Kansas, where he died.
What about your father?
My father died on July 17th, 1894, in Pennsylvania. I have a copy of that death certificate, too.
Therefore, when Jeremiah Fulton died in 1882, his interest in the mining claim was inherited by your father, and then in turn that interest became yours upon your father's passing.
That's correct.
Do you have the documents in question with you today, Mr. Brighton?
I do.
Brighton reached inside his coat and took out a small bundle of papers. He held them out toward O'Hara, who took them and placed them on the table in front of Judge Caldwell.
I'd like to enter these documents in evidence, Your Honor. If you'll examine them, you'll see that they are exactly as my client has described. Two death certificates, giving the dates of death for his father and Jeremiah Fulton, and the original partnership agreement between the two men.
I'd like to examine those documents too, Your Honor.
Of course, Counselor. You should have had an opportunity to look at them before now.
I would have liked to, Your Honor, but Mr. Brighton refused.
Well, if I'd been here earlier, I'd have ordered him to comply with your request, Counselor.
I didn't trust him. You don't know what's been going on around here, Your Honor. The whole town's against me. Woodford's got the local law in his pocket.
That's enough, sir. Please confine yourself to answering questions from counsel.
Sorry, Your Honor.
Caldwell separated the documents and spread them out on the table, face up. Luther looked them over. The two death certificates appeared to be legitimate, and he didn't really doubt that they were. He was much more interested in the so-called partnership agreement. It was scrawled on a piece of brown paper with ragged edges, evidently torn off of a larger piece. He kept his face carefully expressionless as he studied the document.
Now that counsel has had a chance to study the documents, I would ask that he stipulate as to their authenticity.
I'm not prepared to so stipulate at this moment, Your Honor.
The documents are entered into evidence. You have any more questions for this witness, Colonel O'Hara?
No, Your Honor.
What about you, Counselor?
Yes, Your Honor. I have a few questions.
Proceed, then.
Mr. Brighton, you said this agreement was written by Jeremiah Fulton.
That's right.
And it's signed by both men, Fulton and your father, Chester Brighton?
You can see that for yourself.
Would you mind reading what it says?
Out loud, you mean?
That's right.
The document is already entered into evidence, Counselor. It doesn't have to be read aloud for that to be true.
I'm aware of that, Your Honor. I'd still like for the witness to read it.
Very well. Proceed, Mr. Brighton.
This agreement is made between Jeremiah Fulton and Chester Brighton on February 21st, 1872, that we will be partners from now on in the mining claim we have been prospecting in the Wasuck Mountains of Nevada. This claim runs from Juniper Creek in the south to Skunk Ridge to...
That's enough. I believe the rest of the document spells out the location of the claim and then specifies that the two men could sell out only to each other, as well as the agreement that in the event of death, the surviving partner would inherit the entire claim.
That's what it says. You saw it yourself, Turnbuckle. Satisfied?
My client apologizes for his tone, Your Honor. You have to realize how much of a strain this whole affair has been for him, to have his rightful inheritance stolen from him. And now I apologize, Your Honor. It's just that this case seems so cut and dried.
Yes, it does. Just a few more questions for this witness.
Proceed.
Now, you didn't read exactly what that document says, did you, Mr. Brighton?
I certainly did. Now that it's been entered into evidence, I'll let anybody look at it who wants to.
When is it dated?
February 21st, 1872.
How is the name of the month spelled in the document?
What?
How is February spelled?
F-E-B-R-A-R-E-Y.
And the date? The 21st?
Mr. Brighton?
I don't see what this has to do with anything.
Neither do I, but counsel has asked the question and you have to answer. Besides, as you said, it's written down right there on the paper.
T-W-E-N-N-Y-F-U-R-S-T.
So the agreement is actually dated February 21st. Is that correct?
Yes.
And how is agreement spelled?
A-G-R-E-M-I-N-T. What the hell difference does that make?
I'll tell you what difference it makes, Mr. Brighton. I'll tell you why it's so important. Nearly every other word in that document is either misspelled or used incorrectly. Jeremiah Fulton never wrote it. It's a fake.
Everybody hush. I want to hear what else Mr. Turnbuckle's got to say.
He's not...
I said pipe down, counselor, and I meant it. Go ahead, Mr. Turnbuckle.
Mr. Turnbuckle, do you have any proof of your accusation?
I do, Your Honor.
Luther stepped back to the defense table and picked up the bundle of telegrams Phil Noonan had brought from Carson City.
I have here evidence that Jeremiah Fulton was far from the semi-literate bumpkin this so-called partnership agreement makes him out to be. In actuality, he attended Harvard, studied geology, engineering, and natural history. He not only graduated with honors, he went on to obtain his master's degree and his doctorate, studied in Europe, and overall was a highly educated man whose work was published in numerous scientific and academic journals before he decided to come west and put his education to use in searching for gold and silver. You have the witness's own testimony that Jeremiah Fulton wrote that error-riddled document, and I submit to you, Your Honor, that such a thing is patently impossible.
Let me see those telegrams.
Your Honor, I object.
Do you have any further questions for the witness, Counselor?
No, sir.
Step down. I believe you said you had only one witness, Colonel O'Hara.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have any witnesses, Counsel?
No, Your Honor. I believe you have enough evidence to make a ruling.
Then I'll hear closing arguments, Colonel.
I have a closing argument, all right, Your Honor. That man is a fraud. He's not Claudius Turnbuckle.
Colonel O'Hara is correct, Your Honor. I am not Claudius Turnbuckle, but that doesn't change the facts of the case.
Then who are you?
My name is...
Luther. That's what you were trying to say that day. Your name is Luther.
That's right. I'm Luther Galloway. I was Mr. Turnbuckle's law clerk.
Was?
He was killed during a train robbery on the way here.
Are you sure it was a real train robbery, Galloway? Brighton's gunnies held up a stagecoach just to get rid of Judge Grampus and delay this trial.
That's slander! I mean libel. I mean...
don't believe the colonel is actually an attorney either, since he doesn't know the difference between slander and libel. I think he's an actor hired by Mr. Brighton as part of the swindle he was trying to pull here.
Everybody was yelling now, and nobody paid any attention to the pounding of Judge Caldwell's gavel. Frank knew he couldn't shout them down again, so he slipped his Colt from its holster, pointed the barrel toward the ceiling, and pulled the trigger.
Sorry about the bullet hole in the ceiling, Tip. I'll pay for it.
Don't worry about that, Frank. We got more important things to take care of. Your Honor, you still got the rule on this case, don't you?
Indeed I do, Mr. Woodford.
But opposing counsel isn't really a lawyer.
I'm not convinced you are either, Colonel. But as Mr. Turnbuckle, I mean, Mr. Galloway, was it, has pointed out, whether or not either of you are actually lawyers, the facts of the case remain the same. And based on the evidence in these telegrams weighed against the testimony given by Mr. Brighton, I can only conclude that Mr. Brighton is a bald-faced liar, and his so-called partnership agreement is a fake. Therefore, I dismiss his claim and affirm that the Lucky Lizard Mine belongs to Mr. Thomas Woodford.
What about arresting him for trying to pull a swindle?
My father gave me that paper! I had no way of knowing it wasn't real!
He tried to kill me and Mr. Turnbuckle. Luther, a couple of times. Not to mention what happened to Judge Grampus.
Lies! All lies!
Can you prove that Brighton was involved in any of that, Marshal?
No. I reckon not. But I know it's true.
That's not enough. Mr. Brighton, you're free to go, but I suggest that you leave Buckskin and never return. The same holds true for you, Colonel O'Hara. The law can only protect a couple of tinhorn chiselers so far.
Brighton and O'Hara grabbed their hats and pushed through the crowd in the saloon. Catamount Jack stood aside from the door to let them go.
Good riddance.
Young man, thanks to you, I still got my mind.
Thank you, Mr. Galloway. I don't know what we'd have done if you hadn't have come here and saved the Lucky Lizard for us.
You're not all furious with me?
Well, maybe pretending to be Turnbuckle wasn't the smartest thing in the world, but I don't reckon you meant any harm, young fella. I'm sorry to hear the real Turnbuckle's dead, though. I never met him, but he's supposed to be a mighty fine lawyer.
Don't see how he could be any better than Luther here. He won the case, didn't he?
And in mighty slick fashion, too. You knew all along that the key was that partnership agreement, didn't you?
It had to be. And there had to be a reason Brighton wouldn't let anyone see it. I just tried to find out as much about Jeremiah Fulton as I could, hoping there would be something to prove that he couldn't have written it. I knew Brighton couldn't be too confident in it, or else he wouldn't have kept trying to delay the trial. He just wanted to use the threat of a legal defeat to pressure Mr. Whitford into signing over the mine.
Say, I was supposed to be charged with assaulting Brighton for that punch I threw at him.
Since Mr. Brighton has left the court, I see no reason not to dismiss any charges he may have pending against you, Mr. Woodford. In fact, the court is dismissed.
So it's all over? We don't have to worry about anything anymore?
It appears that we don't. Brighton is gone.
A fine lawyer you are. You let a flunky from the real Turnbuckle's office beat you.
I never dreamed he would admit to his deception like that. I thought we had an agreement.
You saw how much agreements are worth. If I ever catch up with a bastard who faked that one for me, I'll kill him. He should have found out more about Jeremiah Fulton instead of assuming that just because he was a prospector, he couldn't be an educated man.
Where are we going?
I'm going to do what I should have done to start with. I'm going to take what I want.
I never claimed to be a real lawyer.
A short time later, they approached the abandoned mine where Cy Stample and the rest of the hired gunmen were waiting. Stample strode out to meet the buggy, an eager expression on his craggy face.
Is trial over? Did you win?
No, shut up.
You didn't get the mine.
No. The judge ruled against me.
Damn it! The boys ain't gonna like it when they find out they came all this way and did the things they did for nothing.
It won't be for nothing. We won't come out with as much as we hoped, but there's a considerable amount of silver on hand out at the Lucky Lizard. We're taking it.
Raiding the mine, you mean?
That's right. I've been paying attention, and I happen to know that it's been a while since any silver shipments left the mine. There has to be quite a bit of bullion stored at the stamp mill. Enough for you to pay your men and leave good shares for the two of us.
You're talking about being outlaws. You can't do that.
Why not?
You'd be fugitives from now on. And I'm sure men would be killed when you raided the mine. You'd have murder charges hanging over your heads.
Mister, there ain't one of us who ain't already killed somebody who got in our way.
Well, I haven't. I may have been a criminal, but I've never been a murderer. And I'm not going to start now. You can count me out of this madness.
I already have.
Brighton turned toward O'Hara and pressed the barrel of the pistol he had slipped from his pocket against the phony lawyer's side and fired. O'Hara slumped to the side. Brighton gave him a shove that finished the job. O'Hara fell from the buggy and landed onto the ground with a heavy thud. Blood trickled from his open mouth.
Figure that's what you had in mind when you said there'd be good shares left over for the two of us. I'll go tell the boys to get ready to ride. You coming with us, boss?
Damn right I am.
I haven't come this far not to be in at the finish.
Luther still had a hard time believing that everyone in Buckskin didn't hate him. Once the Silver Baron had been transformed from a courtroom back into a saloon, though, Frank Morgan insisted that he sit there at one of the tables, along with Tip Woodford and Diana and Conrad and Rebel Browning, and explain everything about his masquerade, which he did.
Maybe you shouldn't have done it, but everything worked out all right, Luther.
Mr. Stafford's going to fire me when he finds out what I did.
Maybe not. I'd be willing to write a letter to Stafford saying what a fine job you did of handling Tip's case. Might make him think twice about getting rid of you. I reckon in the long run, you'd be an asset to the firm.
But I can't pass the bar exam.
I think you're just too nervous about it, Luther. You're smart, you know the law, and you've got common sense. Well, some common sense anyway. I bet you do fine when you take that test again.
Well, perhaps. I suppose I should try.
Nobody accomplishes anything without trying. You just remember that, Luther.
I will. And I appreciate the offer of that letter, Mr. Morgan.
Call me Frank, remember?
That was when I was Claudius Turnbuckle.
I sent for Stafford to Turnbuckle because I wanted Tip to have the best legal representation he could. As far as I can see, that's just what he got.
I'm gonna go on out to the mine, let the fellas know they're still working for me.
I'm sure they'll be glad to hear it.
I'll go with you, Pa. I need to check on some things in the office. We'll see you later, Mr. Galloway. For supper at our house tonight, maybe?
I'd like that. I'd like that very much.
I'd be willing to write a letter to John Stafford, too, Galloway. I like a man who's not afraid to take a chance and seize an opportunity. If Stafford doesn't want to continue employing you, I might be interested in finding a spot for you in one of my companies. Our companies, I should say.
I'll leave the running of them to you, Conrad, you know that. That includes who you want to hire. Can't say as I think it would be a bad idea, though. Luther here's pretty sharp. And he's tough, too. He's been shot and stabbed and blackmailed, and he kept right on fighting.
I did, didn't I?
Just remember to tell the truth in the future, and you'll be all right.
Luther smiled. But that smile suddenly froze on his face as he glanced toward the saloon's entrance and saw who was just now pushing his way through the bat wings. Shock sent his heart racing. The man strode into the Silver Baron, moving a little slower than usual and leaning more on his heavy walking stick, but his voice was as strong as ever as he spotted Luther at the table.
Galloway!
Who in blazes is that?
Claudius Turnbuckle. The real Claudius Turnbuckle. Mr. Turnbuckle, I thought...
I know what you thought! You thought you could leave me for dead and take my place! I heard all about it from some fellow called, Catamount Jack, when I stopped at the marshal's office. You'd be Frank Morgan?
I would. It's nice to meet you at last, Mr. Turnbuckle. I figured I'd never have the pleasure.
Well, after the pack of lies this young whippersnapper fed you, about me being dead, you mean? After he lied and claimed to be me?
The doctor told me you wouldn't live. He said you couldn't possibly survive the wounds you received in that train robbery.
Well, clearly, he was wrong about that, wasn't he? He underestimated how strong I was. And how determined to live!
Are you all right?
Well, a bit weak still, but I'll be fine. Marshal, why is it this man behind bars?
Charged with what crime, sir?
Well, impersonating one of his betters!
It's true, he lied to us about who he is. But you can't arrest a man for lying unless he's doing it to carry out some crooked scheme. Luther here was just trying to help. After you got shot, he could have turned around and gone back to San Francisco, you know.
No, he couldn't have. I ordered him to come to Buckskin and tell you what happened to me.
Well, he carried out half that order.
Mr. Turnbuckle, you told me that the client had to come first. I thought I should try to help Mr. Woodford just as Mr. Morgan wanted. But I didn't think anyone would pay any attention to a lowly law clerk, so I pretended to be you. I admit that. But I meant no harm. I just wanted to help.
And he did. He won the case, and quite handily, too.
Who are you?
Conrad Browning.
Oh, good to meet you, Browning. No offense, but you're younger than I expected you to be.
That's what we all told Luther when we thought he was you.
Well, you should be grateful that I haven't sacked you on the spot, young man.
I am, sir.
What happened to you?
I got shot.
And stabbed. In fact, the varmints who caused all the trouble around here tried to kill him several times. That would have been you on the receiving end of those bushwhack attempts if you'd been here, Mr. Turnbuckle.
Is that true, Galloway?
Yes, sir.
And yet you carried on and won the trial anyway?
He sure did. Brighton and his phony lawyer never had a chance.
Well, that's surprising.
You got the makings of a mighty good lawyer here, Mr. Turnbuckle. If I was you, I wouldn't let him get away.
I'm going to have to think about this.
Go right ahead. But you should know that if you decide to terminate Mr. Galloway's employment, I intend to hire him myself.
Well, no, I never said I was going to fire him. Just that I ought to.
Marshal, come quick.
Frank picked up his hat from the table and put it on as he headed for the entrance. He heard footsteps behind him and glanced over his shoulder to see the others following him.
What is it, Phil?
Phil just brought in that other lawyer, that Colonel O'Hara. He's in bad shape, Marshal. He's been shot.
Shot? Who'd shoot him? Although I reckon you might have felt like it.
I've been right here in town the whole time, Frank.
I know that. Come on, let's see what it's all about.
As the group hurried toward Dr. Garland's house, where O'Hara had been taken, Phil explained that a rider had come into town with the phony lawyer's body slung over his saddle.
Jack took him on down to the doc's place and sent me to fetch you, Frank.
Do you know who found him?
Monty Calhoun. He was on his way into town when the fella came staggering out of some trees alongside the trail. Monty said he looked like he'd been wandering around for a while. And Monty thought at first he was just lost, but then he saw that somebody had shot him.
Catamount Jack was waiting on Dr. Garland's front porch when Frank and the others arrived.
The doc says it don't look good for O'Hara, Frank. I figured you'd want to talk to him if you could before he cashes in his chips.
Did he say who shot him?
Yeah, Dex Brighton.
They went inside and found an equally grim-faced Dr. William Garland standing beside the bed where Desmond O'Hara lay. O'Hara's eyes were closed, and his face was as pale as the sheets on which he lay. His chest still rose and fell, but the movements were feeble and ragged.
Is he unconscious?
I'm not sure if he can hear you or not, Marshal.
O'Hara, it's Frank Morgan. Listen to me, O'Hara. Did Brighton do this to you?
Brighton shot me. Dirty double-crosser.
Where is he now? I'll track him down and see that he pays for what he's done.
Gone to mine.
What mine?
Lucky Lizard.
Brighton's gone to the Lucky Lizard. Why?
He and his gunmen raid the mine, steal silver.
How many men does he have?
Don't know for sure. He said 30 or 40.
Good Lord. 30 or 40 owl hoots fixing to raid the Lucky Lizard? We got to get out there, Frank.
Round up as many men for a posse as you can, Jack. Let them know it'll be dangerous, though. You and Phil follow me as soon as you can, with as many men as you can find.
You're headed out there now?
Might still be time to warn Tip and his men. He rode out there a while ago.
Diana was going to the mine with her father.
I know.
I'm coming with you.
You're not a fighting man, Luther. You're better with words than guns.
But I'm tough. You said it yourself.
Suit yourself. I don't have time to argue with you.
Galloway, wait! Have you lost your mind?
By the time they reached the livery stable, Conrad and Rebel had caught up to them.
We're going too.
Thought you said Tip Woodford's problems weren't any of your concern.
They're not, but you are. If you get yourself killed, it'll mean a lot of paperwork for me straightening out your half of our holdings.
And Diana and I have gotten to be friends. I want to help her if I can.
I don't think you should go. It's too dangerous.
I figured you would have learned by now that you can't win that argument, son. Anyway, Rebel's a better shot than you are.
Damn straight.
With the help of Amos Hillman and Vern Robeson, they had horses saddled within minutes. Frank handed one of the two spare pistols from his saddlebags to Luther, and Conrad took the other one. Rebel already had a gun in her handbag, a silver-plated .38. The four of them rode out, pounding along the trail to the Lucky Lizard. The mine wasn't far out of town, and within minutes of leaving the settlement, they heard gunfire coming from that direction.
It's too late! Brighton and his men have already attacked!
Too late to warn Tip and Diana, maybe. Not too late to lend a hand. The fight's still going on.
But from the sound of the shots, it was quite a battle. Frank knew it wouldn't last too long, though, if Brighton really did have 40 gun wolves with him. The miners would have been taken by surprise, and they wouldn't be a match for such a crew of hardened killers. Frank signaled a halt before they reached the mine. They couldn't just gallop in blindly. That would be a good way of getting themselves shot to pieces. Instead, he swung down from the saddle and motioned for the others to dismount. Then Frank shucked his Winchester from the saddle boot and trotted forward through a screen of pines to get a look at the situation. The other three followed him carefully. Frank saw that Brighton's gunmen were spread out in a long line, using trees, rocks, and anything else they could find for cover as they poured hot lead at the office building, the stamp mill, the miners' barracks, and the entrance to the mine tunnel. Puffs of gun smoke from the buildings and the tunnel mouth showed that the men who worked there were putting up a fight.
That's not good.
However, as Frank watched, some of the outlaws began to circle around, coming in close to the office, barracks, and stamp mill while the others covered them. And he knew that in a matter of moments, the defenders in those buildings would be caught in a crossfire and overwhelmed. In fact, a group of four men had just reached the rear of the office building.
Damn!
Dex Brighton was among them, and although Frank snapped a shot at him with the Winchester, the bullet missed, and Brighton kicked the rear door open. He disappeared inside the building, followed by the three killers with him. Frank tensed as shots roared inside the office. That was the place where Tip and Diana were most likely to be. He was about to tell the others to cover him and make a dash for the building when Luther Galloway suddenly burst out of cover, streaking toward the office. He had pulled his left arm out of the sling, and the black silk flapped behind him as he ran, the borrowed pistol clutched in his other hand.
Blast it!
Frank looked toward Buckskin and saw the cloud of dust rising in that direction. Catamount Jack and Phil Noonan were on their way with that posse, but it would be another few minutes before help arrived.
Everyone stay here. See if you can pick off a few of the varmints.
Then he ran after Luther. Neither of them reached the office before the front door opened and Dex Brighton stepped out onto the porch, holding a pale and obviously frightened Diana Woodford in front of him. She didn't look like she'd been hurt yet, but the barrel of Brighton's gun was jammed cruelly into her side. Behind them came another man, craggy-faced and ugly, with Tip Woodford as his prisoner. Blood dripped down Tip's face from a gash on his forehead, and crimson stained the left sleeve of his shirt, too.
Morgan! Stop right there!
Frank threw on the brakes, and Luther had no choice but to do the same.
It's over, Morgan! Unless you want Woodford and the girl to die, you'll back away from here! And if that dust I see is from a posse, you'd better call them off! I'll kill everybody here if I have to!
Take it easy, Brighton. Nobody's gotta die.
Oh, you're wrong there! The man who ruined everything has to die!
With that, Brighton jerked the pistol he held away from Diana's side and pointed it at Luther Galloway, his finger whitening on the trigger. Luther didn't hesitate. He charged forward toward Brighton and Diana, even as flame jetted from the barrel of Brighton's gun. But Diana had lurched backward against Brighton just as he pulled the trigger, and the bullet whistled past Luther's left ear. Before Brighton could fire again, Luther bounded onto the porch and crashed into both of them. That knocked Diana free of Brighton's grip. All three of them tumbled to the planks. At the same time, Tip Woodford began struggling with his captor, wrestling desperately with him over the man's gun. The craggy-faced outlaw slammed a fist into Tip's face and knocked him over. He tried to turn back toward Frank Morgan and bring his gun up. Frank let the outlaw's revolver come level before he fired. The bullet punched into the man's chest and knocked him back a step. The gun in his hand sagged, but he struggled to lift it again. Frank's Colt roared twice more, the slugs crashing into the outlaw's body and driving him into the log wall of the office building. He dropped his gun and slid slowly down the wall, his face already going slack in death. At the other end of the porch, Dex Brighton hammered a couple of savage blows into Luther's face, stunning him. Brighton rolled away, snatched up the gun he had dropped when Luther barreled into him and Diana, and leaped to his feet. Splinters flew from the corner of the building next to him as a shot from Frank's gun narrowly missed him. Brighton fled around the corner. Frank went after him, ducking as Brighton twisted and fired. But then the hammer of Brighton's gun clicked on an empty chamber. His face contorted as he flung the gun away. Frank holstered his Colt and pounded after Brighton and brought him down with a flying tackle. They came up slugging, left, right, fist hammering home, eyes swelling, blood dripping. Frank bored in as Brighton stumbled back. A left hook to the midsection doubled Brighton over, putting him in perfect position for the looping right that Frank brought around. Brighton flew backward, his feet leaving the ground, and crashed down in a limp sprawl, out cold. The popping of gunshots made Frank swing around. He saw that the posse had arrived from Buckskin, and now Brighton's gunnies were the ones caught in the crossfire. They tried to shoot their way out of the jaws of this unexpected trap. Several of them were cut down by the deadly accurate fire of the miners and the posse men before the others flung their guns down and shoved their hands in the air. The battle of the Lucky Lizard had been fierce for a while, but now it was over. Frank would have dragged the unconscious Brighton back to the office building, but Catamount Jack and Phil Noonan showed up to do it for him. When he got back there, he found Luther sitting on the steps next to Tip Woodford while Diana fussed over both of them.
Tip, you get winged?
Just a scratch. I'll be fine. How about you, Frank? You look a mite like you tangled with a wildcat.
Just Brighton. And I'm all right, too.
Where's Brighton? Did you get him?
Jack and Phil are bringing him back. He's busted up worse than I am. But he'll live to stretch a rope for killing O'Hara, I reckon. He deserves it for plenty more than that. If they can only hang him once.
Once will do it. He's got it coming, sure enough.
Wolf had accompanied the posse from town, and now the big cur was nosing around the body of the craggy-faced outlaw Frank had shot, and the fur on his neck rose. Frank looked down at the man and nodded.
Oh, this must be the fellow who took those pot shots at us, Luther. Wolf caught his scent a couple of times, and he never forgets the smell of a no-good skunk. Are you all right?
Yes. I just wish I'd been able to capture Brighton myself. I guess I'm not cut out to be a hero.
Are you crazy? You charged right into the barrel of his gun when he tried to shoot you just to save me. How much more of a hero could you be, Luther?
Hero or fool?
Sometimes it's the same thing.
She sat beside him, took his chin in her hand, turned his head to face her, and then kissed him.
Boy ain't too big a fool. He's letting her kiss him.
Looks to me like he's kissing her right back. Yeah, Luther's pretty smart. Reckon he'll be a real lawyer before you know it.
The craggy-faced owl hoot was Brighton's lieutenant, Cy Stample. Frank found that out from questioning some of the hired gunmen who had surrendered rather than be killed in the fight. Frank had reward dodgers on him that said he was wanted from Oregon to Texas for rustling, bank robbery, murder, and just about everything else under the sun. Nobody was going to miss him or the other hired killers who had crossed the divide during the ruckus. Judge Caldwell and Claudius Turnbuckle promised to see to it that Dex Brighton answered for his crimes. He would be taken to Carson City to be tried, but given O'Hara's deathbed indictment of him, a conviction and a hanging seemed like foregone conclusions. Frank wouldn't be around to see it. He had reached a decision. He came into the Silver Baron the next day and found Tip and Diana there, along with Conrad and Rebel. Luther was there too, sitting next to Diana, who didn't look too happy. Frank pulled back a chair and sat down.
What's wrong?
Luther's going back to San Francisco.
I have to. I still work for Mr. Turnbuckle, you know. He decided not to fire me after all.
My job offer is always open, Luther.
Thank you, Mr. Browning. I appreciate that. And I may take you up on it one of these days, depending on how my other plans work out.
What plans are those?
To become a lawyer. For real. And come back here to Buckskin to practice.
Really?
Really.
Buckskin can always use another good citizen, son. We'll be happy to have you hang out your shingle here.
By the way, I've got something for you, Tip.
What's that?
Frank unpinned the badge from his shirt and slid it across the table toward the mayor.
Now, daggummit, Frank, you can't do that.
It's already done. I'm resigning as Marshal of Buckskin, Tip. Give the badge to Catamount Jack. He deserves it, and he'll do a fine job for you. He spent more time being the marshal lately than I have.
He can't handle the same sort of trouble that you do, though. He's not a...
He's not a gunfighter. That's what you're gonna say, Tip. It's all right. And it proves my point. Buckskin doesn't need a gunfighting marshal anymore. Things are settling down a little more every day. You'll still have some trouble, but Jack and Phil Noonan will be able to take care of it. They're mighty good men.
You can say that after everything that happened with Brighton?
Varmints like Brighton are few and far between. My mind's made up, Tip. It's time for me to be riding on.
You've already stayed here longer than I thought you would, Frank. If you're not careful, you'll put down roots.
Wouldn't want that, would we?
Not when there's a good reason people call you the Drifter.
You'll come back this way sometime, though, won't you?
Probably. What would it matter to you?
Well, if you're in this area, you can stop by Carson City and see us. We're moving there from Boston.
I knew you were thinking about moving west, but I figured you'd wind up in Denver or someplace like that.
We considered that, but Rebel liked Carson City when we passed through there, and with the way the Browning holdings are expanding all through the west, it's centrally located. Handy for any troubleshooting I need to do.
You have any trouble you need me to shoot, just let me know.
I always do.
You sure I can't talk you out of this, Frank?
Positive.
All right. When are you leaving?
Later today. I've never seen any point in waiting once my mind's made up.
Well, then you damn well better have a drink with me before you go.
With all of us.
Well, I reckon I can manage that.
Frank led Stormy and Goldie out of Amos Hillman's livery stable. Wolf padded alongside them. Goldie was saddled, and Stormy would carry the supplies Frank was taking with him, for now anyway. He planned to switch back and forth between the mounts.
Frank! Doggone, Frank. This ain't right. I'll talk your ear off if I got to, but I got to make you see you need to stay right here in Buckskin.
I got two ears, Jack. Don't worry. You'll do just fine.
Oh, hell, I know that. I've been carrying you ever since you took the marshal's job.
And don't think I don't appreciate it.
But it just ain't gonna be the same around here without you. This is your home now.
Mr. Morgan, a word with you, please.
What can I do for you, Mr. Turnbuckle?
Well, there's a rumor going around town that you're leaving.
It's no rumor, sir. I've resigned as the Marshal of Buckskin.
What are your plans now? Where are you going?
I don't have any plans, and I reckon I'll go wherever the trail takes me.
Then, perhaps I could ask a favor of you. Before I came down here to Buckskin to find out what that young pup Luther was up to, I received a telegram from my partner Stafford. It's causing me a considerable amount of concern. He's down in Southern California, tending to some affairs for another client of ours in Los Angeles, and he's running into some trouble. I had to read between the lines of his wires, you understand, but I'm afraid it's the, sort of trouble in which you frequently become involved.
Gun trouble, you mean?
Well, that's what I'm worried about. Since you're leaving Buckskin anyway, is there any chance you could see your way clear to riding down that way and checking to see if Stafford needs help?
I reckon I could do that.
Excellent. Here's Stafford's wire telling you where he can be contacted. I appreciate this more than you know, Morgan. Stafford can be a cantankerous old badger, but he is my partner.
I'll do what I can for him. Well, so long, Jack.
Take care of yourself, you old gunfighter.
You too, you old pelican.
With that, Frank swung up into Goldie's saddle and heeled the horse into a trot that carried them out of Buckskin. Stormy paced them to the right, and Wolf bounded along on the left. Frank didn't look back. The Drifter was on the drift again.
The Last Gunfighter Killing Ground is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2008, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Casey Platt, Eric Messner, Ren Casey, Terrence Aisle Ford, Stephen Carpenter, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Tony Nam, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, Jonathan Watkins, Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Tom Simpson, David Coyne, Andy Clements, Mort Shelby, and Jeff Baker. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for Graphic Audio by Doug Crinslin. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld and Nathaniel Perry. Title theme and original music by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter, be sure to look for the series A Town Called Fury, as well as Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, The First Mountain Man, and Sidewinders. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other thrillers in Graphic Audio.
Tyler Stern has rejected the assassin's life.
We've got a contract for you. 50,000 gunders for one kill, Kyler. With that much, you can take Aline annually anywhere. You'll have done the world a good turn, and you'll never have to work again. It's just one last job.
There's always one last job. I'm finished.
The God King's successful coup has left Kyler's master, Derzo Blint, dead and buried.
Oh, I've been having a little party, celebrating.
What are you celebrating?
Derzo Blint is dead!
Tired of it all, he is starting over. New city, new friends, and a new profession.
Kyler, there are always going to be people so bad that we think they deserve to die. I don't know. What I do know is what you've told me about what killing has done to your soul. No matter what good it seems to do for the world, it destroys you. I can't watch that, Kyler. I won't. I care about you too much.
All right. We should be able to leave in the morning.
But the beckoning will of the Shadow soon comes to call on Kyler once again.
Logan's alive. He's in the hole.
Logan's alive?
Every day, the chances that Logan will be discovered get worse.
You want me to break into the hole and save Logan?
I want you to rescue Logan. And then I want you to assassinate the God King.
Kyler is faced with an agonizing choice. Will he give up the Way of Shadows and live in peace? Or will he risk everything by taking on the ultimate hit?
Look at yourself! I know this hit is impossible! I'm sending you after a god! But if anyone in the world can do it, it's you! You were made for this, Kyler! Some things are bigger than your happiness! You can give hope to an entire nation!
It'll only cost me everything.
Will Kyler see the light when his world is shrouded in shadows? Find out in Shadow's Edge, the thrilling second part of the Night Angel trilogy. Available now in Graphic Audio.
It's good to have you back, my friend.
It's bad to be back.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
Many years ago, my people, the Togairu, were conquered by the Berenice. It is a situation that cannot be allowed to continue.
I know the tale.
You are to be ranger in Togai, then?
That is the land I know. I understand the ways of the great oxen and the high tundra lions, of the black diamond serpent and the wild horses. Never did I doubt that my tenure with the Tuelafar would end with my return to Togai, my land, my home, my love.
No! You must run! All of you get out, or you're all going to die! Get out! Now!
You disgrace your father! You bring dishonor to your name and tragedy to those who brought you in to care for you!
It was an accident!
It was the logical conclusion to your reckless course! The inevitable result of who you are, Adrian Windon! And the proof that you are no ranger and never shall be one!
Were I to raise an army tomorrow, I would turn it upon Anderblock Innes and raise the valley. I would see Lady Dasaron and every one of her taunting kin dead in the grass.
Bear witness, ye all, for on this midsummer day of God's year 840, does Gilsepony Windon take the surname of Ursel. Hail to the Queen!
Hail to the Queen!
Don't miss The Demon Wars Saga, Book 5, Ascendance, Part 1. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.